Tell me a little bit about Raheem Beasley. Tell me a little bit about you. What was growing up like?
Well, for me growing up, I grew up on Southern in 428, a little bit down away from Muskegon High School. And growing up it was all right, but it wasn't just like how.
Can you come closer? A little bit closer so we can pick you up better.
All right. It wasn't quite like how, you know, it should have been, but it was, my mom and dad did, you know, try to move me to be going down the right path, but I was so.
When you say growing up like it shouldn't have been, what do you mean by that? Give me an example.
Like my household was a good household, but it was like I wanted more because I always wanted like certain things, and those things that I didn't get, I tried to seek out by living the street life. Like I always was, like before my dad went to prison, I was always...
How old were you when your dad went to prison?
I had been like in the... I would say third grade, maybe second grade, somewhere.
So, you remember distinctly, you remember vividly your dad going to prison? Were you old enough to remember what was going on?
Not exactly like what actually happened, but I remember like him leaving out the house and they, like, the police coming to get him. And after that, I didn't see him again for like a long time. I think the next time I ended up seeing my dad was like fifth grade, I think. Yeah, like fifth grade. But
do you remember what you felt when that incident happened as a little boy? Do you remember what you were thinking?
I mean, for me, then it was probably like, dang, like, my daddy, I wonder what they doing with my daddy, like, where my father going? But when I started getting older, I seen it as like a normal thing, like, see people go to prison and jail all the time. You know, it became a normal thing, like, it wasn't really like nothing that was shocking as I got older. And once I started learning.
It was normal?
Yeah, once I got older, it was normal, like, I got uncles that have been to prison. I got brothers that, not my real, like, blood brothers, but they, my brothers, they done been to prison. So it's like, that's a normal thing. But none of my real blood brothers, they ain't never been to prison. But they done been to jail, though. But they ain't never been to prison. I'm the first one to actually go to prison out of my family of siblings, like my mother and father's kids. I'm the first one to go. So this is kind of like a big thing with me leaving. So
tell me a little bit more. You talked about fifth grade. Mm-hmm. And so what happened as you got older? So
as I got older, I became like more rebellious against my mother. And I regret a lot of the stuff I did towards her to make her like angry, because I felt alone a lot of times. I felt like I didn't have nobody there to comfort me, because the way I wanted to be comforted, only my father could do that. And I blamed her a lot as I got older. I used to blame my mom all the time for everything. But sometimes I might not tell her, but in deep down, I held it in. Like, this your fault, that's your fault, you know. But the whole time, it wasn't never her fault. It was my fault. I was doing certain things and blaming her.
Was your father out at this point?
No, he was still,
in.
Okay. No, he was still in. And once he did get out and became in my life, then I was all right.
How old were you then? Approximately, do you remember?
I was like I was still in the fifth grade, so I was like, I had been like 10, 11, something like that.
Okay.
So, and then he been with me since then. So.
Okay.
But even though I had him, I was so deep into what I was doing now.
In fifth grade?
Yeah, I was deep into what I was doing. I was running the street, being just being bad. Like, for fun thing for me, when I was little, growing up with me and my friend, we would throw rocks at cars. You know, little silly delinquent stuff, just terrorizing people. Like, and as I started to get into middle school, as I progressed and got older, it went from throwing rocks at cars to beating people up, normal little people just walking down the street. Like, it was like, I was so lost when I was out, and when I was growing up, I was lost. Like my parents ain't bad parents. Like, I got whoopings, you know. My dad was on me, my mama was on me. I didn't get good grades in school because I didn't feel like school was really nothing that was gonna help me. Like, I didn't feel like school was gonna really get to me to get me where I wanted to go. But I liked to play football. That was my thing. Like, pretty sure some of the young men that'll be listening to this or that you know me, know I was good in football. Like, played for Muskegon. I played for Port City, I think like a year, I think my mama let me play for them. And then I left, and then I played for Muskegon Hikes. And after that, I just played for the Hikes for the rest of my football little career. And then I went back to Muskegon High School to play football. And I end up going to the youth home. One day, me and a few of my friends, we seen this couple walking down the street. And they started, some of my friends said to one of the young lady, revoked her and her husband at the time, or her boyfriend, or something like that, to start cussing, like, and calling us the N-word, and, you know, just, you N-words, and y'all, you just all kind of just evil things they were saying. So, you know, me being a leader to them, we chased the couple. One of them, I think the lady was pregnant, if I'm not mistaken. I think she was pregnant.
So the couple, they started calling you guys names,
yeah,
because
one of them said something to her, and that made her start going like, oh, y'all N-words, and
one of your friends said something, yeah, to the female of the couple.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then that made her go off. Then when she went off, that made me like, you know, you calling me an N-word. I ever said nothing. Nah, I know he was wrong for what he did, but I don't got nothing to do with that. So I felt.
How did you know she was talking to you?
Because she said to all of us, like, okay, she was saying like, all you N-words and woo woo. So I felt offended. And in that time, I was all, as growing up, I always felt like I had to prove myself, because I'm shorter than everybody. I'm short, and, you know,
How tall are you?
I'm only probably like 5'5", maybe 5'4", somewhere in there. And, you know, I always grew up lifting weights and stuff, but I was always shorter than everybody. So I feel like I always had to poke my chest out, if you will, towards people, like, okay, you think because you're taller than me, you could beat me up, or you think you got a little more weight than me, you could beat me up. So I went around like, okay, this ain't gonna happen. Ain't nobody gonna be able to beat Raheem. This is Raheem. This ain't going. Like, it's gonna be either me or you. It's gonna be you, because it ain't gonna be me. And that was my mentality growing up. And that's kind of what led to this kind of situation.
So you're how old when that incident that you just mentioned, how old were you at that time? Because you said you went to juvenile.
Yeah, I had to been like 16 or 15 in that era.
So what are you thinking? How long are you in the juvenile? Is it a juvenile home, mm-hmm, where you were? How long were you there?
I had to been there like 10 months.
10 months. Mm-hmm. So what are you thinking? What's going through your head while you're there about your life and about the choices?
At the time, I was thinking like, I need to change. I had it in my head like, okay, you need to get out. You need to get back in school, first of all. And I had a...
How old you say you were?
15.
15. And you were not in school at that time?
I was in school, but I really wasn't going to school. And then when I was going to school, I was getting kicked out. So I told myself when I got in there and I was doing good in school. I was getting all A's while I was in there. And, you know, just working out and staying to myself, really.
And when what school was that?
No, I'm talking about when I was in the youth home.
Oh, when you were in youth home, okay. Yeah.
And when they told me I could leave, I changed myself, but it only lasted for so long because I got to hang around the same people and going back into my old neighborhood, and that got me to right back to where I was.
Did you feel like while you were there for those 10 months, did you feel like you weren't ready to leave? Did you feel like did you ever feel like that's where you should be?
No. I felt like, man, I need to get up out of here. Like, I need to get back home to my mom, my sisters. And I had a daughter on the way. So,
it was at 15?
Like, yeah. I had a young lady pregnant. And my daughter, I think she had been like, she may have been like a few months. Probably a little bit more than that. Somewhere.
So you were a father at age, how old were you when the baby was born?
I was 17. Was I 17? I was 16 when I had my daughter. So when I had my daughter, I still didn't change. Like, I still was doing just same stuff. Like my whole mentality, like I said before, my whole mentality was just off. Like, I had a lot of rage and anger built up that I was trying to release on everybody.
From what?
Just because.
Where do you think it was from?
Because I felt like nobody really cared about me. I felt like no one listened to me. I felt like I really didn't have nobody for real. Like, that, I just felt alone. And part of that was because the man who I told you is my father. He's my father to me, my father. But he raised me from being younger. My real father has never been in my life. He could see me and keep going or really care about me. Like, he don't deal with me. Like, when I do see him and we get to talking, you know, he'll say like, "Yeah, I should have been there for you," and all that, but as soon as I leave from his sight, out of sight, out of mind, like, so I'm gone. He don't think about me. I don't even think he really knows my daughter, if he's even seen her. So that was kind of a thing that built up rage in me too. It's like, why you don't wanna, you got another man he my other brothers and sisters' father. And I'm thinking in my head, like, this man gotta step in and say, he gonna be my father, and he not even my real blood father, but he my father though, but he's not though. So that made me mad. Like, why you don't wanna deal with me? Like, why you don't wanna be there for me? And I wanna be with you. Like, I wanna have you in my life. I wanted you to see my daughter and wanna be there for her and for me, but you don't even wanna deal with me. And I think that's another thing that made me not do so much as real good as a father. Like, I was there for my daughter, but I wasn't though, because I felt afraid that I was gonna do her the way that I was did. So I kind of like, I was there, but I kind of like always, when she come around, my daughter's around, I'll be doing other stuff. Like, I do something for her, buy something, then I go hang out in the streets. Like, it was just, I was just afraid, because I didn't want to do her the way I got did, and have her with the feelings that I had. And in the midst of me trying to avoid that, I still did it. And that's why I'm glad that it's really, this situation that I'm in is a blessing. It might seem like to other people that it's not, but to me and my family it is, because if I would have kept going down the road I was going, I probably wouldn't even see 20. I'm 20 now. I turned 20 being near. So I probably wouldn't even have seen 20. I'd probably be somebody investigating my murder or anything. I probably would have been dead though, because I was doing too much. Like, and it wasn't even about me carrying guns or anything, because I rarely carry guns. Like, I was more of a physical person. I didn't want to kill nobody, but it was like I knew that somebody would get to the point where they tired of me being like a bully type thing, that they was going to go to the next step with me. It wouldn't be just, oh, we're going to keep fighting. No, I'm going to kill you because you beat me up last time, so the only way to get you up off me and get you gone is I got to shoot you. And nowadays, that's how it is. See, my mentality was still how it used to be, like back in 06, 07 when everybody was fighting and stuff. Like, it really was shooting going on. Like, you really heard about a shooting in Muskegon back in them days. And now, it's a normal for somebody to have a gun. You know, like I told the judge at my sentencing day, like, it's a normal for somebody to come around me and have a gun. Even if, I'm not saying I have carry guns or that I keep guns on me, but it's a normal for another man to be like, oh, you know, I got the thing on me or whatever, because it's for protection now. Like, everybody gotta have a gun. Like, I felt like my mama should have had a gun. Like, it was, everybody needed a gun to protect themselves, because everybody around, all the young kids wanna, it's like they wanna prove themselves with a gun. Not saying that physical altercation is better, none one of them are the right way, but to me, I just felt like I'd rather somebody, you know, fight somebody or something, and then y'all get cool. Like, cause you know, growing up, young men always, they fight, you know, fight a couple times, have a couple words, but they'll get cool. Cause I got a lot of people that I was growing up with that I fought a lot, and now he's my best friend, come to my court dates, all that, like, talk on the phone, but when you kill somebody, you take that person's life, and now what? He gone forever. There's nothing you can do to make up for that, or to make up to his family what you've caused, that damage you've caused them. And that's why I said that this was a blessing for me, because this not only opened my eyes and showed me where I was wrong and all the wrong I was doing, it helped me get closer to the Lord. And since I've been in here, I've been in every Bible study. I have two other young brothers up there with me that help. We fellowship and read our word, you know, and we stay in the Bible of where I am. And that helped me a lot with what I'm going through.
So what would you say to, somebody's going to hear this, and they're going to say, Mr. Beasley has gotten closer to the Lord. Well, of course he's gotten closer to the Lord now. What would you say to that person who's skeptical of your new faith in God? What would you say to that person?
I would tell them that it doesn't matter where you find the Lord, as long as you find him and you trust in him and hope in him, and you will be able to tell a man not by the things he's saying or anything that he's changed, but by his fruit, by his deeds, as the Bible would say. You could tell a man's faith and works by the things he does, like the fruit he bears, like not actual fruit for those who are here, what I'm saying, who don't know, is fruits would be me coming to talk to them and changing their lives by my testimony and things that I've done, me bringing forth more people to want to change their lives.
Had people approached you before this incident that happened 18, 19 months ago? Had people approached you prior to that time to talk about God and to attempt to get you to be a part of a fellowship? Had people been asking you to do that prior to this? And what did you say to them?
I took heed to it, but I was kind of like stuck in my ways. Like at that time, it wasn't.
So being here has given you an opportunity to see clear. Is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Is what you said. Now, if you were to talk to your biological father that you say has caused a lot of pain, inside of you. It's what you said earlier in the interview. What would you say to him? What would you say to him if you were to talk to him about all the pain and the heartache that you've experienced? You said you felt you had something to prove.
I would tell
him. Just going back.
I would tell him. It might sound crazy to some people, but I would say thank you. I would tell him thank you because I regret the things that I did, but everything happens for a reason. The Lord doesn't make any mistakes. So in order for me to get closer to him and to really learn my ways were wrong and go through all the rough times I went through, it was showing me that the Lord really, it was the Lord cared, that he cared for me, because people who go through hard times and are chastised, as you will, that the Lord chastens, those are the ones that he loves. And I feel that all those years of me doing bad and getting in trouble, like I never got away with nothing. Even as a little kid, I never got away with nothing. I always was caught for the things that I did, like being bad. Even when I was little, like I got a whooping or something, like I always was caught. So I felt like that was my chastisement, just like this. This is me being chastened for the wrong I was doing. And it turned me away from the evil I was doing, the sinning I was on, all that. It helped. This has really helped me see that it's a better person. It's another spirit that I could show people and help people, not just always want to fight somebody or want to prove this or who dressed this way, who dressed that way. None of that matters to me anymore. Like, I used to be, my mentality was a certain way. I thought like a child and I did childish things, but now I think like a man and I do manly things.
So you equate to the things that you did as just childish things? Not necessarily
childish, but wrong. Like,
okay.
Not thinking in the ways of how a real man thinks. Because a man wouldn't do the things I was doing. Yeah. That's a child. That's a delinquent. Somebody who don't listen to nobody.
So as it relates to all the pain that you speak of, though, earlier, when you talked about the pain that you experienced and the pain that you dealt with and that you felt you didn't have anyone to talk to, what would that person say, the person that experienced all that pain, what would that person say to your father? I understand where you are now and that you feel like this is a part of your journey. I guess is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah.
That you feel like this is a part of the journey, a part of a plan of some sort for your life. Mm-hmm. So what would the person know that pain that you spoke of, what would you say? What would that person say to your father that you feel was a big part of the pain that you speak of? What would you say to him regarding the pain?
I would say, you are a coward. For the simple fact is, you let another man step in your place and take your responsibility of taking care of me and being there for my mother. I've been through times of not having lights, not having heat in my house, not having water cut on, times of seeing my mom always crying and not knowing what we would even eat the next day. Not even having nothing to eat the next day. And I know from what I've seen with my my father, my stepfather, I've seen what a man really supposed to look like. Like, even though he had his faults, he still provided, he still helped. My mom had a stool, if you will, to step on, to brace herself for when calamity struck. She had someone to go to when something went wrong. Like, she had my uncles to go to, or my grandmother, or, you know, my auntie, but my father would have played a big part in helping her and letting her know, okay, I'm here. I'm willing to help. I'm willing to be there for you in hard times, not just when he's getting in trouble or being bad, but when he's in need, like when he needs school clothes, or when you having trouble with all the other kids and you need some money just for anything, food, and just anything. I'm here. I will help you, you know. And that's how my stepfather was. He was like that. He was always helped my mom. Even when he didn't have it, he still found a way to get it. But him, he wasn't even around. So it's like, you're nothing to me. You are, how would you say, just a sperm donor. You're nothing to me, for real. But I don't hate him. I don't despise of him. I love him. Still to this day, I still love him. I wouldn't want nobody that's listening to think that I have hardened my heart towards him, because it's not. I feel that he just, maybe he was lost like I was lost. You know, he just didn't have the right people to touch him as if I've had to touch me, you know. And maybe with me coming out talking about it and being so open and honest with you, that you could put it where the way he could hear it, and or somebody that hears it could say, okay, look, I wonder who his father is, and find out who my father is and go talk to him and tell him, like, you know, your son, I heard what he was saying, and you know, you should really think about going to see him or talking to him to get that feeling of much you hurt him and how much he's recovered now.
So if he did come visit you, what would you say to him at this point?
I would say to him that you played a big part in a lot of the heart ache I had and all the rage and pain I had in me, and I wouldn't want him to feel like, if I was to talk to him, I wouldn't want him to feel like I'm downing him or pushing him away, because I'm not. I still, to this day, come around, you know, come my life, and we could still, you know, kick it.
So if your father came into your life the way that you would like him to be in your life, what would that consist of? What would you two do together? What would you talk about?
Everything. I would say just all the stuff that I never did with him. Like, I'd tell him like how I wanted to experience that with him but didn't get to. Or I would tell him like just certain things that I went through, I wish he would have been there to help me get through them and been there to see me do a lot of the amazing things that I did do that my mother got to just experience by herself because he wasn't there. And I would want him to understand that if I would have had him, I'm not saying that my life would have been perfect or that it would have been I would have been LeBron James or somebody, but it probably would have made me feel like, okay, I didn't do what I wanted to do, but I did all right, and I got both my parents behind me, and they're proud of me still, because a sense of that type of love can touch a young man and help him progress in life. Because I know a lot of young people that I know that's my age or a little bit younger that I've talked to or that I was cool with, they never had their father. So they know. So really, none of my friends really know what it's like to have their father in their life. It always was mom. All we know is mom. You go to the house, stay the night. Where your daddy at? Oh, no, it's just my mom. I don't know my daddy. Well, I don't know where he at. I don't know him like that. You know that? And I feel like fathers need to know that a lot of the men, probably a lot of the men that's in prison today and that's on their way to prison would say, oh, if I had my father to tell me this. Because even when I was, my first time coming to jail, I had a couple older guys tell me, like, man, you need your daddy, man. Like, where your daddy at? Like,
older guys in jail?
Yeah, man, where your daddy at, man? Like, you need a role model. Yeah, a male figure to get to help you through what you're going through and, you know, things like that. And I would tell them, like, I got my stepdaddy, you know, Ted. I got my daddy, you know. They'd be like, yeah, but I could tell you want your real daddy with you, you know, like, even though Ted is there to help you get through stuff, you still need your father with you because it's still a part of you that's still feeling like
you were yearning.
I want my daddy.
You were yearning.
Exactly.
For that. You were yearning for that.
Exactly. And for some other man to come in and tell me that, that made me like, oh, wow, he sees something I can't see.
Mm.
You know, he knows something I don't know. And like my mom always told me, I didn't get this age being dumb, you know, so I'm wise. Wise come with age. Wisdom comes with age, not wise. But